You're listening to Type Radio. My name is George Hardy. Now we're talking.
I cannot let this opportunity pass by to talk about the sort of iconic, which became iconic work for Hypnosis and near the legendary album covers. How did you land a job like that? How did you got to know the people?
The first record cover I did was the first Led Zeppelin, the Crashing Zeppelin, and a fellow student at the Royal College called Stephen Goldblatt, who was in the film school, whose name you see on films now as a lighting cameraman. He knew Jeff Beck, actually. I tell a lie, the first thing I did was a bit of lettering for Jeff Beck. And then he said, there's this band called Led Zeppelin who want doing their first album, and would you have some ideas for it? So he introduced me to Rack Records, which was their management. So that happened, and then nothing happened in the record business world at all for a while. And then I met another person who was at the film school with me at the Royal College, called Storm Thorgerson, who was a member of Hypnosis. I'd met him at college. Mm-hmm. And they always had trouble with their lettering and how to put Pink Floyd on something. So I kind of gradually became their, first of all, their kind of tidying up man, and then more and more involved in the projects. Mm-hmm. Dark Side of the Moon wasn't my concept, and in fact, extraordinarily, I only did a line drawing of it. Someone else did the tiny bit of airbrushing, and the printer put the colour in, so it's a funny one to be thought of as iconic.
I get to think about stuff like that, because the album became iconic, the music on the album became iconic.
It's to do with the band, actually.
Oh, is that the case?
As I say, yeah, sure.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure about that one, because what was actually new about that album cover, which was Storm's thought, and I played a part in it by doing the stickers and the big posters and everything, was that it was a package. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very interesting model for graphic design, is that became a gift. You got all these extra bits you weren't expecting in the parcel, you know, mm-hmm. at Christmas. And that was the break. I think that was what was good about that album. So. And it just kind of grew between all of us, but it certainly was Storm thinking of it. And it became the first one where you got a lot of bits. Yeah. And then we did others for McCartney. I mean, Venus and Mars has lots of bits, all of which I designed. Mm-hmm. Probably the best thing we did was later on was Presence for Led Zeppelin. I think the Black Object one, that's the one that intrigued me most. And I was really involved with that.
But did you like the music also?
No, I never very bothered about the music. I didn't, okay. You know. But I did a. It was lecturing for Leonardo in Venice, and he's always asked me, did you listen to the music? And sometimes I did. But I was more interested in the lyrics, actually. I always been more interested in words. I never had a record player, for example.
Okay.
So I did listen to them, but. Because he started asking that question, I got a book where people talk briefly about how they design covers, and maybe with 100 covers in it. And I did an analysis, and not very many could have heard the music, because an awful lot of record covers are done for the name of the best song, and it's an illustration of that in some way. Sometimes that song is even dropped from the, you know, later
yeah,
on,
yeah.
But it's still the name of the record. A lot of people did record covers before the music was finished enough to listen to. So actually, you know, it's kind of, you know, maybe 40% of people had actually sat down and listened to a completed bit of musical work, if that much.
You're giving yourself an excuse now.
No, it's not an excuse, the best, the most interesting thing is comparison is designing for the fashion industry, which I did a bit at the beginning. The frocks were never made. Printing takes longer than making a collection, you know, certainly design. So you quite often had to go for some notional atmosphere of what they were going to make rather than actually, you know, feel it. And that is a parallel.
Yeah. And doesn't it also result in a sort of the detachment you need to be able to make a better cover for an album if you haven't listened to it?
No, I think that would be an excuse.
Quite so, yeah.
But I mean, we did some of our best work for 10cc, who aren't a very highly rated band, yeah. But the lyrics were really good from them, really funny and clever. And so that was great to get the words, gave you all sorts of ideas.
You travel a lot to Barcelona or to...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want you to answer, but are there big differences between the approach of design in from Spain to England, or is it now all becoming one language?
Well, I don't actually design very much in Spain anymore.
Yeah.
No, I managed to find it different. Whether it was or not, I don't know. What it did do was to sort of give me a different, because certainly the back history of recent design is different in Spain. So there's a fantastic book market in Spain where you can buy ephemera still every Sunday, very, very good. And I've always, every time I go, I go there. And there are always wonderful things that aren't the same as English ephemera and English books and English posters. So that gave me another way of looking at things. And I think, without doing pastiche, I think I do pick up on those differences. I couldn't write a book about them or anything, and I'm not copying anything. But I suppose the most iconic thing, which nobody would know, but is a particular menu for a restaurant in Spain, which lasted for, it's a daily menu where you can write in the middle of a picture of the restaurant, and that lasted 30 years, and it's in books on Barcelona graphics as though it's an old piece, but it's mm-hmm. So it's quite weird.
Yeah.
So obviously managed to slot in somehow into what they were doing, and still be me, and that's to do with maybe using slightly old-fashioned printing and. Cream paper, but I mean, always from choice, I'll use something that has feel to it. And I think the most important thing we can do is not, particularly with the computer, is for things not to look as though they actually physically came out of a printer on your desk. I think that feeling that it's an object is really important. Which is interesting with the conversation we had about none of us having websites and why we didn't last. Did you hear that?
Yes.
I didn't get to talk about it, but I think, something you see on a television, basically, isn't a present.
Something, it's not a present?
No, a present is something that comes through the post, and if you're lucky, it's from Alan Kitching, and it feels of something, and the ink comes off on your hand, and it smells a bit, and it's a present, it's an excitement. And I think it's funny, because I think giving someone a music tape could be a present, but to give you something that you plug in and watch... Or the equivalent.
Yeah, but a film, I mean...
Films, yes, okay, but I'd rather have a pair of socks than a film, I think.
Oh, really?
No, a pair of socks is the worst example.
Yeah, well, your socks. Were your socks a present?
No, I bought myself.
hands play a big part... big role in your work. What's the obsession with hands?
Well, that's started as a collection. If I'm doing a lecture or a new project, I have literally a cardboard box which I kind of feed ideas into because I don't think very fast. I mean, it's accumulative, really, how I think. I'm not very good at doing editorial in 2 hours, which... People in London now, people who work for The Guardian get 2 hours, which I think is extraordinary. And so I can't do that. So I accumulate, and so quite early on there was a drawer which had the word hands on it, which began with a sponge shaped like a hand that someone gave me just because it was funny. And then gradually you start collecting things, and eventually you think, yes, I could do a book on that. And then, by which time you've thought of, gesture, measurement, what's the word? When you touch fingers. Wood or cross your fingers, what's it called?
Not superstition.
Superstition. So you get the chapter. Superstition fits very nicely with religion, because as I said right at the head of this, I'm not religious. So you know, that's one, and then measurement and all sorts of things. And suddenly you think, oh well, that could be the next book.
But does when you answered with the for religion, you said that you don't like to fall back on something else, correct?
Fall back. I thought it was a weakness to fall back on.
But you also fall back on your collections, no?
Yes, so that's okay. That's but it's not that. They're conscious and they're very much me, and no one can tell me how to collect anything. That's probably what I don't like about religion, is that, you know, notions of people telling you about it. It comes from someone out somewhere outside you. I'm strong on morality.
We're not going to go
on. Not on. Yeah. Not on formal. Yeah. Formal things. Yeah. I mean, I think you can do things wrong, and I try not to.
Go on. Yeah, you go.
Well, like the going amateur theme, the graphics without clients. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, it's written, which Carlo picked up on in his introduction to the talk yesterday. It's actually saying that I don't really like the idea, and it's very rude of me because it's none of my business, but I don't like the idea that suddenly graphic designers and illustrators get a chance to use a gallery and they suddenly become artists. Because I think art is a slightly different discipline and very serious one. It's not something you do in your spare time. So that's why I call it graphics, because they're definitely not artist books. They are just graphics, but graphics with me as the auteur, not, you know, as opposed to for a client. But the language I'm using is graphic design, not art.
I'm mostly interested because everybody's really, especially graphic design, well, I don't know especially, but graphic designers also have, they're very keen on being professional. And while you are sort of touching the...
Well, I hope they're really professional books, but in other ways.
The contradiction in the whole...
Yes. No, I mean, that's the lowest line, is all work has to be professional, in inverted commas. Yes. Now, it's playing with words, but it is making a couple of points. One is, no, I'm not an artist doing this. I'm still doing graphics, but with a different client. And the other is a joke about not making money and always being late with them and loving it, which I think is amateur. That's what that means. That's where the word comes from. Mm-hmm. So, to be an amateur of something used to be a compliment if you were talking about, a gentleman architect, for instance, who didn't actually have to make a living from it, but
It sort of has a negative connotation
in
the world,
but not when you explain it.
And
also, sorry, it's a joke about going professional. I can't go professional. I'm already professional. I've only got one way to go, which is amateur. A sports person, I can't look back and say, right, I want to now be paid more money. Can I do graphics for Manchester United?
For our last question, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, as someone who did a small set of things in a very, very well. I'll have to rephrase that several times, but
that's okay.
There's someone who tackled some small corners of graphic design, and did some good jobs. I can't think of how to end that sentence, but in other words, I think it's too much to hope for people to think of you as kind of, which a lot of people would like to be remembered as someone who changed graphic design or covered every aspect of design. And I've always thought it would be quite nice to be thought of as the expert on a couple of things.
And not the amateur in this case, no.
No, the amateur is a joke, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.